This episode of The Yarn is sponsored by Heinemann in their professional book, Breathing New Life into Book Clubs, Practical Guide for Teachers. Colby talked with co-author Sonia Cherry Paul about the book.
In book clubs, our kids were really reading. They were excited and energized to read. And what we tried to do was to give educators lots of practical tips and strategies. You know, once you sort of think through those big pieces of the puzzles, you'll get swept up in the excitement and the fun that the kids are experiencing, and it won't feel as intimidating as we might imagine. Hopefully, this is a book that inspires teachers to light a fire for reading in the classroom.
So, whether you're looking to freshen up your classroom book clubs or begin implementing them for the first time, Breathing New Life into Book Clubs is a great place to start. Visit Heinemann.com to learn more and order a copy.
Welcome to The Yarn, a school library journal production. I'm Travis Yonker. Here's one of my favorite children's literature facts. Gordon Corman wrote his first published book, This Can't Be Happening, at McDonald Hall, when he was in the seventh grade. Since then, he's written countless entertaining books for kids. Actually, let's count them, because Gordon's 100th book, The Fort, comes out this summer. It was too tough to pick just one of his books to focus on, so in today's episode, I talk with Gordon about his early start and how writing turned from a project to a hobby to a summer job to a full-time gig. So let's begin. Here's my conversation with Gordon Corman.
Okay, Gordon, so I just wanted to start off with a little story. So I'm a school librarian, and when I first got hired in my current school district, it was 2007. And so I'm going into the office, and, you know, there's stuff from the previous person who had that position and everything. So I'm kind of going through file folders and going through drawers in the desk and everything. And I open up this one drawer, and there's these two black and white photos, and it's an author at an author signing. And I think, gosh, that guy looks really familiar. And so I flip over the picture, and on the back it says, Gordon Corman, 1986, Blue wow. Marble Bookstore.
I would have been about 23 or something like
wow.
that. 22 or 23, yeah. It's a long time ago.
So I said, if I ever met you, I just wanted to show you those photos. So now I get my chance. So thank you.
Not in 1986, but I actually met my wife at the Blue Marble.
Did you really?
Yeah. So I was doing an autographing there, and she was a master's student, like a teaching student at Miami of Ohio. But it turned out that her professor knew the owner. And so she brought a couple of her students with her to the signing, and they stuck around for dinner. And that's actually how I met my wife.
Oh my gosh. That's funny. I wanted to talk to you a little bit just about your whole career. Because I know that you started real early within publishing, and could you kind of just like walk me through that beginning of becoming published for the first time?
Yeah, sure. So it was actually my seventh grade English assignment. So in my middle school, the track coach had to teach English, and that was, most middle school schedules are too complicated anyway, but for whatever reason, the only adult who was available to cover our English class in that hour turned out to be this coach. And, you know, nice guy and a good teacher, but he'd never taught English before. He was 22. He didn't seem young to us then, but in retrospect, he was not that much older than we were. And all his training was PE. So when it came to creative writing, he just didn't know what to tell us to do. And he basically said, work on whatever you want for the rest of the year. Not in everything, but for that 45-minute period, every single day or most days, we could just write. And at first, I just started working on it in class because, you know, what choice did I have? I got into it. Right. And I started bringing it home and working on it at night. And by the end of the year, like up in Canada, we used to go till the end of June, I had written my first book, which was called This Can't Be Happening at McDonald Hall.
So what was seventh grade Gordon like? Like, were you someone who was into storytelling from a young age, or was it, did the lightning kind of strike during that seventh grade class?
I mean, not exactly. I was more of a class clown wannabe, kind of, but not even a full-fledged class clown. I mean, probably more like a loudmouth, right? I always had like a pungent comment for every situation. I don't know how much teachers would love having me in their class. But the one thing I always was creative, right? I'm an only child. I was frequently the only kid in the house. And the way I kept myself entertained was just by making stuff up. And so humor was my thing too. I've heard a lot of interpretations of it, you know, just that if you want to be funny, it's because you like to create joy or whatever. But from a very young age, sitting around, a family dinner, whenever someone told a joke that made everybody else laugh, that was always something that I admired. You know, even when I was too young to kind of get the joke, I wanted to be that guy who could sort of say the thing that got such a big reaction. And I think that one of the reasons why, I mean, I think all of my books to some extent, but certainly my early books are all funny, is because of that.
Yeah. So you had that first sort of story written, you know, where does it go from there? How does it go from something that you're working on in seventh grade to being, a published book?
Well, so I was the class monitor for Scholastic Book Orders. So I'm thinking I'm practically an employee of these guys already, I had their address, right? Like it's printed on all the book order forms. And actually in Canada, that was pretty simple because it was all one office at the time. So I just got my mom to type it for me. I mean, it was the 70s. People didn't really know how to type as kids, and mailed it to the address on Scholastic Book Order.
Oh my God. And what did you hear back? Did it take a long time for them to respond?
Well, I mean, in seventh grade time, it took forever, right? I mean, so for me, like I didn't hear back for the first 2 weeks and I had probably written off, the possibility that this was ever going to happen. So yeah, like I, after a couple of weeks when I didn't hear anything back, I just sort of assumed that this was off and, or maybe I didn't think too much about it in the first place, but I would say it took 3 months, 3.5 months, not terrible time to hear back from a publishing company. Although that's by my today familiarity with the business, and that was a very kind of very cautious letter of, yeah, maybe we might one day, possibly if there's a ring around the moon and the positive ion content is good, consider publishing it. Which of course is what's known in the book business as an extremely enthusiastic response. But it was a few days after my 13th birthday. So by that time I was an eighth grader when I signed the contract for it, and it actually didn't come out until I was a freshman in high school.
So then after high school, you went to college in New York, right?
Yes. I was an NYU film major for the first little bit. And I really thought I was going to be a movie director. And, I just was really abysmal at that. Like, not a visual artist, not a cameraman, I was a story guy. And so I was really not succeeding as a film major, and I switched over to a program called the Dramatic Writing Department, which is sort of more, still not what I do, like sort of screenwriting, playwriting, and that's what I finally graduated.
So after you graduated college, what were the job prospects? Like, what would be your dream job with that degree or with what you've learned there?
Well, I guess, you know, in New York, you would be either become a playwright, you know, on Broadway, or, you know, you'd start with off Broadway and you work your way, or a screenwriter, or you'd work in the film business, or you'd get a job driving a cab and write spec scripts, you know. But for me, you know, I was also just really, really lucky that, you know, I wrote my first book for school, and I really kind of wrote my second book to kind of prove it wasn't a fluke, you know, see if I could do it again. And I sort of created a hobby in high school, and it sort of went from project to hobby to summer job. And by the time I graduated, it really was a living, right? It wasn't, I wouldn't describe it as a princely living, but I didn't have to sort of support myself from anything but writing books by the time I graduated college. So I was really lucky that I never had to do anything else besides writing for kids.
What is sort of just like a typical day of writing for you now? You know, how has that changed? Do you have certain way that you go about things?
It's taken me a really long time to develop anything remotely approaching good work habits, to be honest. Like it was really, really hard when I was in my 20s, and suddenly it's like, okay, no classes. Like, this is not my side thing anymore. This is my full-time job. But nowadays I'm in a pretty good flow, right? Like, mornings are usually, like work, not writing, but other kinds of work, you know, Zooms and dealing with editors. And, you know, I do quite a bit of speaking, both virtually and in person. Is back. Hooray.
Yes.
Nothing quite like being in an, you know, with an audience of actual human kids. I missed it so much during the pandemic. And then the afternoon is kind of my writing time. So that's probably my real uninterrupted, you know, between like 1 PM and dinner is a time that I try to devote exclusively, if I can, to writing.
So when you were writing those first books, it was more just like bursts whenever you could fit it in. Or
exactly. I wrote a lot on breaks. I wrote a lot in the summer. Being the age that I was, I wrote a lot really late at night, you know, that the midnight to 4 a.m. shift was like great writing time. I don't do that anymore, but I think that just happened when I had a family, you know. Actually, even before that, like, I remember as soon as I graduated from college, I was self-employed, but no one else I knew was. So I could stay up till 4 o'clock in the morning and sleep till noon, but I would essentially be putting myself in a different time zone from everybody that I knew. So I just adapted to more ordinary hours just because everybody else was on ordinary hours.
What would you say is your favorite part of the writing process? What would you say is your least favorite part of the writing process?
So, I mean, nobody loves revision, you know. I mean, it's where the book kind of gets good, but it's not fun, right? As much as, you know, as much experience as I've had with this, you still kind of hope that your editor is going to finally get back to you and be like, you know what, you nailed it. You know, we just have to fine tune a couple of moments, and otherwise we're ready to go. I think for me, because I'm such a plot guy, my favorite part to write is the end of a book, because that's where all the sort of little through lines that I've been creating for so long and working so hard to set up, they kind of pay off at that moment. And that's a really cool feeling.
Yeah, like finishing the puzzle, sort of.
Exactly, exactly.
Just one last question. So if you could go back and talk to seventh grade Gordon, would you have any words of wisdom, words of advice?
I mean, you know, I think it's just that I know that it's all going to work out. and he didn't. So I think, you know, I would just sort of ask myself to chill out if I could, but I wouldn't, because it's just the way it's going to be. I mean, you know, I keep going back to that thing where, when I think back to that time, I remember being so impatient, you know, and I remember always sort of thinking, you know, if one little thing could happen differently, you know, this would be way better. And I almost felt like I was so stressed about what wasn't happening that I couldn't enjoy what was happening. So I guess what I would say is, you know, this is really pretty cool that you're doing this and you're starting something great that's going to last. You know, you're going to be a pretty old guy and you're still going to be doing this. So just take a moment to be happy about it, you know, enjoy it. Think about how cool it is, because it really is pretty cool. Book 100 comes out in the summer, right? So that's kind of been a milestone that at first I didn't think I was going to be that psyched about, but I have to say that kids kind of told me to be into it, you know, because whenever, you know, they said, what book are you up to? And as it got up to like 97, 98, 99, they were like, well, what are you doing for book 100? You're going to have a big party, or you're going to have a, you know, big celebration. And it sort of told me, if it's a big deal for my readers, it should be a big deal for me.
That's cool. So are you doing something special? Well, what's the title of the book? What's the book about?
Oh, so book 100 is called The Fort. I don't know if there's going to be a celebration. I mean, I think there's probably going to be some kind of a marking of it. You know, unfortunately, it's kind of happening during still a COVID time. So I don't know if there's going to be, you know, 10 days of skywriting and fireworks or anything like that. But it's the story of a group of kids who stumble on a Cold War era bomb shelter, like a fallout shelter built by an eccentric rich guy way back in the 80s, long forgotten, and they kind of take it over as their clubhouse / fort / secret meeting place.
Oh, cool. Cool, cool. Yeah, kids love the number 100. So I can see where they would be excited for you to get to book number 100. Well, congratulations. That is a really big milestone. That's awesome.
Thank you so much. Well, I'm definitely not making it to 200. So I guess that's the other reason why I should celebrate this time.
I think so. All right, Gordon. Thank you so much. I really appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thank you, Gordon Corman, for the interview. Thank you, Philip Stead, for our theme music. Additional music for this episode from the Free Music Archive. Have an idea for the show? You can contact us via email at theyarnpodcast@gmail.com and visit us online at the School Library Journal website. I'm Travis Yonker. Thanks for listening.